Me Grimlock, not podcaster, me Grimlock King.
Welcome to The Pull Bag. Join us as we dig out our latest comics and discuss them with a rotating panel of the GCRN crew. So sit back and enjoy this week's Pull Bag.
Me Grimlock say you listening to all things Transformers.
Hello and welcome back to the Autobotly August coverage of IDW Publishing's Transformers comics here inside the Pull Bag and also featured on all things Transformers. I am one of your hosts, Steve Two and Mike. Joining me once again is Ryan the Nameful Merkley. Hello, sir.
Meow.
You're not
Harley. I always say yo or something else. I needed to mix it up.
Strange cat noises. Okay, then. Today, we are continuing on with the Transformers Autocracy Trilogy with the second part of that, which is entitled Monstrosity.
I'm going to be less whiny.
Written by Chris Metzen and Flint Dilly with art by Livio Remondelli. Yeah. So, I...
Yeah, you're going into this fresh, so I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going into this fresh, but the other thing was I posted way back when we actually recorded this, I posted the day that we recorded it on Facebook saying that, you know, started reading Transformers, this is on Facebook, Monstrosity from IDW Publishing, Chris Metzen, Flint Dilly, Livio Remondelli. I have never read this before, so forgive my ignorance. Why is it spelled with a Y? We'll talk about that in a moment. The question has nothing to do with the image, just love that image, and it was the image of Chapter 11 with Megatron and the fusion cannon and all of that. And Flint actually goes on to reply to me several times, and he basically says, think of it as a villain's journey. So basically, Autocracy was the hero's journey, sort of, so Monstrosity is a villain's journey, according to Flint Dilly. At least that's what he told me to think of it as. Yeah, I'm going into this fresh, and the first issue confused me as all hell. I had no idea what was going on. And I'll say this now, and I don't know, I assume it's the, and while, you know, I've talked to the guy, I don't want to insult Mr. Captain Continuity John Barber. I'm sorry, the series edits, or the collection edits, or the way the chapters, it's mainly because of my vision. I've got 2200 vision without correction. When I do wear my glasses, I have 2060, but this design for the covers and for all this other stuff that's extra in the trade, the covers specifically, I had to keep looking to make sure I was on the right chapter to see where I was in my notes, because I can barely see the damn chapter numbers and titles at the top of the page. And I've got a 23-inch monitor. So that's pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, I have a 23. Anyway, so...
Shut up.
I don't know. I mean, they're large in the... Yeah. I have the prints, as usual, yes. For these. Although I've got the digital of Primacy, so I guess you're going to hear if I can... If I'm going to find out that there's any big differences between the digital and the print, because I only have the original issues mm-hmm. for Primacy...
Yeah.
And just, I don't know, it's easier for me to do this if I've got a trade of some sort
yeah,
near me.
Absolutely, yeah.
This one's easy to sum up, though. Injured Megatron gets dumped on Junkion Planet, kills things, and leaves. Scorponok takes control of Decepticons, wakes up Trypticon, wrecks up Cybertron. Megatron comes back, offs Trypticon. Save Cybertron. The end.
Yep, pretty much.
So I finally finished my synopses in about a minute. This is because you made me turn the fan down, so... I'm trying to end this as quickly as possible. No, just kidding. I mean, this one's easier to sum up, and I think it's because I'm used to Megatron's characterization kind of jumping around mm-hmm. in the IDW verse, so... Yeah. It bugs me a lot less that, you know, he doesn't necessarily mesh with other depictions of the character.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, this is just kind of another fun trade. So, I mean, we get our first major glimpses. The Dinobots appeared briefly in Autocracy. I think I mentioned that near the end.
Yeah, they did.
And we also get our first sort of major look at them in this.
Yeah, and like I said a moment ago, why are they spelled with a Y? That made no sense to me whatsoever. And then a couple of other friends on Facebook are like, well, is it pre-Earth? Is it this? Is it that? I said, yeah, it's before. It's like right as the war is starting. Yeah.
A, it's pre-Earth, and B, it's a reference to other comic appearances.
Okay.
Now, if you want to ask me why they were the Dinobots with a Y in those other appearances, I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm pretty certain that this is just a reference to that.
And as I got reading further through this, I think I forget when they eventually reveal what happened to them and to Scar and all this and all that and everything else and how he was fooling around with Dynamic, whatever the hell it is. That's why I thought it was a Y, because he was fooling around with Dynamic alt mode adaptation or whatever it is. That's why I thought it was a Y. I'm not going to take a point off of my grade from a comic for a name being spelled differently. It's not.
Yeah, it's my job to take points off things for stupid reasons. Don't steal my bit.
But I'm saying, it's like, you know, I'm one of those, and you know this, I'm one of those people that I have a reaction to something immediately, and then I'll go back and I'm like, okay, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
You never do that. You always watch the trailer and you're like, well, this is dumb. Oh, I hate
here
it.
Here we go. Knock it off. Jerk.
Anyway.
Why the hell is... So, my biggest complaint about the first chapter, why the hell is Bulkhead here? I was so confused. I was so lost when Bulkhead showed up.
Why not? Remember, IDW's been, like, merging this stuff for a while. We had Tarantulas in Sins of the Wreckers, Rat Trap on Cybertron. So, I mean, they've merged the continuities. Knockout was...
In Windblade.
In Windblade, but he was part of another colony.
Yeah.
One of my favorite sort of random ones was Rhinox guarding a chamber in Ancient Cybertron. No, I'm perfectly fine with it if they want to, you know, have all of the characters in them.
And I was fine with it too. What I was more so confused about was the fact that Bulkhead is on the Senate or the Council or whatever this is supposed to be. That's what I was more so confused with. I was fine
all right,
with
that's
it.
Fair.
I was fine with it being like the Prime version, the Aligned continuity. I'm glad it was not animated Bulkhead, because that would be even stupider. To have animated Bulkhead on a Senate committee, whatever the hell this is.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. What were you thinking on the first two chapters, I guess?
So, yeah, I mean, I kind of lump all this together. I liked what they've done with the Dinobots. In terms of A, I like the designs. So again, Livio Romanelli's on art and absolutely kills it in this book again. I really like his work on these books. You know, again, I singled it out in Autocracy that I thought it was great too. Second of all, I like the story with the Dinobots that essentially, you know, for whatever reason, we don't know why at this point, you know, they're desperate for Energon and they've taken over a refinery, et cetera, et cetera. Secondly, I like the Megatron stuff. So he's still heavily damaged from the end of Autocracy.
Yep.
And we have full-on references to Transformers the movie again.
But see, I don't mind it because it's a line here or there. It's not, and it's Flint Dilly. I mean, the guy was the story consultant. He was, you know, crafted part of the script for the movie. You know, he was the guy that they were using, you know, 30 some odd years ago. I don't mind that because of the simple fact that it's a nice, It's kind of like when you're playing, what is it, War for Cybertron, and in the background of one of the stages, Rumble says some line that was from the show or the movie or whatever. You know, I don't mind that at all. I have no problem with that. So I have no problem with, you know, them throwing in lines from the original film.
I feel like this was one of those times when you should have waited and let me finish my point. But anyway, I was going to say that I think they work much better in this. I like that it's mostly individual lines. Yes, some of the events mirror the movie, but it's not specific entire scenes as it was in the...
Autocracy.
In Autocracy. So I liked it here. Also, I mean, I think it helps that it's different characters because it's Scorponok tossing Megatron out and he decides he's the leader of the Decepticons now, which again is kind of a nice change of pace because, you know, usually Megatron stubs his toe and Starscream decides he's the new leader.
Yep.
Oh, Megatron fell. Starscream, I'm fine. I just tripped over something. Nah, I'm the new leader. Okay. I mean, I liked that. We got a brief shot of the Junkions early on, and we quickly discover, of course, later on that they're kind of nuts.
And they've always been nuts, though. I mean, okay, yeah, in the cartoon
series. Yeah, but
they're
a little more, more psychotic here.
Yeah.
I mean, they immediately attack Megatron, presumably looking to sort of use him for scrap, and he absolutely mauls them.
Mm-hmm.
This whole story could be, you know, called Megatron is a Badass.
Yeah.
And that would have worked well. So, I mean, yeah, it's... I liked... I'm a fan of this entire story. I don't know what it is. It just all read much more better and much more easily for me than Autocracy did.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's because I think it's easier to fit this into continuity, which apparently is a pet peeve of mine, or, I don't know, maybe I was just more used to it and I'm just able to have more fun with this, so.
And let's face it, I mean, we all love a good hero, but, you know, we all deserve a great villain, and Megatron is one of the greatest villains in fictional history.
We don't necessarily always get to see him let loose and kick ass either.
That's why I think you like it. I like this. I didn't have a problem with reading this at all. I enjoy, once I get over like my little nitpicky things, which again, I fully admit that, you know, the bulkhead thing and a few of the other things I've already mentioned are very much nitpicks. You know, it's not ruining my enjoyment of this. Like you already said, you like the Dinobot stuff. I like that. I was confused of having six Dinobots, and I'm like, huh? And then they explained it. Okay, Scar was a sixth Dinobot. Grimlock killed it. You know, we'll get to that. But it's one of those things with Megatron. Megatron is in a place where he has been dethroned by some Beast Wars knockoff.
Usurped. So.
Yeah, I mean, I know technically Scorponok, you know, came out of G1 and Rebirth and all that, but...
Not really technically, he's always been for...
You know,
Scorponok's best... I would argue Scorponok's biggest and best claim to fame was the excellent work done by Simon Furman at the end of the U.S. comics run. Mm-hmm. Where he sacrifices himself fighting Unicron. He finally sort of finds his place, but then, of course, is immediately killed by Unicron standing up to him. But it was... I really liked that character. Now, this one is none of that. This Scorponok is a slimy, not much of a fight you head on, more of a stab you in the back, at least... when it comes to Megatron type guy. So I still enjoy him though in this. I mean, he's the villain to Megatron's sort of villainy in this story.
Mm-hmm. As we go through, when we eventually get to issue 3 here, but Megatron with him trying to repair himself and whatever else, he grabs a damn cape. And I'm like, please tell me they're not going to do Hobo with a Shotgun. Please tell me they're not.
That movie was A, filmed in Canada, and B, badass.
I'm not, there was a joke based on Revenge of the Fallen Megatron. Because how he dresses up in his little cloak and whatever else.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Yeah,
see,
so.
The clothes on Transformers, I'm not certain that always works. But yeah, I liked him in... I don't know.
The cape on Starscream works. You know the cape and the crown and all that works because coronation and whatever else. But yeah, in general, clothing on Transformers doesn't really. I mean, Livio makes it work here. So.
Yeah, I actually really like this design. And as he goes on the planet Junk, he fixes himself with pieces of the dispatched Junkions, mm-hmm. and it gives him sort of like an uneven look, but I really like it. Again, like, Livio's art and the designs in this are fantastic, so...
Yeah, he almost has, like, because I'm looking at some of the issue 3 panels where he's saying, the ionized acid rain burns through my plating. This, where he's standing there with the cape over him and the... It almost looks like he's some sort of vampire.
I'd argue it makes him look more gladiatorial, which is where he came from.
Yeah, that's where he came
in
from.
In most of the continuities. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So, I mean, we continue on. We still get... we get at least some of the politics back home. I should mention that Diatlas and his group leave the Autobots, which was mentioned in the IDW stuff. When I say IDW stuff, I mean more than meets the eye. But we see it here. Again, like, whatever. I'm not going to worry about continuity here. So that's fine. Megatron comes across... Pentius, I believe, is the pronunciation. Or Penitus.
I believe it is. I don't know. It's a damn Quintesson.
Yes, and enslaves it to help him, guide him through the Sea of Rust, and get him off planet because, you know, he's memorized the planet and believes he knows, you know, where ships come and go from.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they want to get to the Pillar of Rust, which is the closest thing it has to a spaceport. meanwhile, the Dinobots raid does not go well, to put it mildly. A, the Decepticons arrive and try to take the refinery. Then B, the Autobots arrive.
Well, we should clarify that. Grimlock calls the Autobots. I mean, you know...
But the original plan was for them to be out of there with the fuel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everything goes wrong as one after the other arrive. Mm-hmm. They fight briefly. We get our first inkling that something's really wrong with Grimlock as he fights Scorponok and just becomes more and more animalistic.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we're interspersed again with a couple shots of, speaking of animalistic, this time Megatron's beating the crap out of a bunch of Sharkticons. Later on, he will fall in and fight them in the water.
Yeah.
And they eventually let him go for whatever reason. Well, it turns out they figured out that A, he's a badass, and B, he's evil. So anyway, back at the refinery, Scorponok detonates the place instead of letting anybody have it. It kills a bunch of Transformers. A lot of people look at Optimus Prime's early run as leader as a complete failure at this point. Scorponok turns out to be a pretty crappy Decepticon leader after this, and kills one of his own troops, apparently going to the Galvatron School of Leadership. Man, I'm glad my bosses don't, or else I'd be long dead for being a terrible employee and a smartass. I'm just going to jump forward. So, I mean, we get continuations of all these storylines with not a lot of resolution yet. I'll mention, though, that Ratchet, Wheeljack, Perceptor, and Jetfire are on a team examining where it is the Dinobots came from, or rather something happened to them.
Right.
And it turns out, A, they discover Trypticon. B, they discover sort of like liquid that transformed the Dinobots into, and now we find out what happened to them. They became really sort of, I don't know how, what to call them here, animalistic, or they're unable to control their alternate modes.
They're, animalistic, bestial, maybe.
When they turn into dinosaurs, they get really, really angry and start killing. And that's what happened to Scar, the sixth Dinobot that they mentioned. He had messed with their adaption, their alt modes. And, yeah, it just...
Didn't go well.
They got really angry.
Yeah, didn't go well. What I like about... You said it was Ratchet, Perceptor, Wheeljack, Jetfire, and who else?
I think that's it.
I like that team. I think that, you know, that's essentially the science team of the Autobots. I mean, you know, Wheeljack's the mechanic slash inventor. Perceptor's the one that, you know, examines things. Ratchet's obviously the medic, and Jetfire is kind of like the air support military part of that group. We eventually get, you know, so I like that. I like all of them on a team. I think that's interesting. And I think them finding raw Energon in the center of the planet is cool as hell. Now, I was not it wasn't until like the very last second that I realized that who it was that's down there, because they don't really tell you right away. They don't really tell you it's Trypticon right away. They just tell you, oh, there's a dinosaur in there, or oh, there's this giant thing in there, or whatever.
Well, they show his head.
Yeah.
There's not too many giants, like Titan-sized dinosaurs in Transformers.
Yeah, that's true.
I liked all this. Again, I like this trade, so...
Yeah.
I mean, next up, the Megatron arrives to the Pillar of Rust, and consequently, at the same point, a ship arrives. And it's the Terracons who are there, who earlier left.
Yep.
The Decepticons, because they wanted to make sure Megatron is dead. So they immediately attack Megatron, who promptly takes them to Ass-Kick City. He gets roughed up a bit, and he rips the power out of his Quintesson buddy in order to kick
survive.
The crap out of Hunger in particular. But I enjoyed it. There's something, again, like, it always bugged me that Megatron has not had an awful lot of thorough ass-kicking moments in Transformers history, despite the fact, you know, his arm is a giant cannon that's supposed to be able to, you know, wipe out cities. And in this book, he goes to town on everybody.
Yeah.
In fact, he promptly leaves the planet after beating the Terracons into submission. And we get another, you know, callback to a movie scene when he meets Scorponok again, who he also takes promptly to Ass-Kick City. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And this is after, I should note, Scorponok has decided to wake up Trypticon, which I'm not real clear what his bright idea here was. I knew he wants to sow chaos and that kind of thing, but Trypticon's strong enough to wipe out your army, too, so...
Yeah.
Not the best of plans.
And Trypticon here, the way that Metson and Dilly write him, he's not G1. He is G1. He looks like G1 Trypticon, but he doesn't seem like he is as dumb as G1 Trypticon was.
No, and this is something we'll get into in his next primacy aside, his next major appearance when we finally get into Barber's series with what the hell was the last one?
Not Punishment. Punishment, Redemption, and Salvation.
Yeah, with Salvation. He literally is the G1 Trypticon, but he's G1 Trypticon from his tech specs. So, yeah, he's not the mindless thing he was in the animated series for some reason. He's actually a callback to his old tech specs, complete with the fact he doesn't really want to fight that much. He just kind of gets used, and he's not happy about it.
Yeah.
And this origin is actually kind of similar to that. I mean, he gets waken up all cranky. He's covered in that stuff that, you know, makes you angry, and he's being fed it on the inside, as Grimlock and Megatron discover when they are swallowed by Trypticon. This is after Trypticon punts Prime so far. I think he went through the uprights on a field goal. So
there's no Deflategate about that, folks.
That's like 2 years ago. I mean, your Patriots cheat. Get over it.
So does every other team. The Patriots just got caught.
So that just means they're bad at it then.
Anyway.
So Megatron and Grimlock reluctantly have to join forces. Grimlock begins to figure out how to control his anger in alt mode, and they're able to stop Trypticon. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the book, Megatron takes control of Trypticon for himself.
Yep.
And that's kind of where we leave off. And I've skipped over some stuff, but honestly, this is worth a read, especially if you're a Generation 1 Transformer fan. And if you're interested in just sort of a fun story where maybe don't think too hard about some of it, it's just enjoyable in a way that other Transformers fiction, when it does the have fun but don't think too hard about it, is not enjoyable. This one does it well, I feel like.
I enjoy
watching Megatron wreck shit.
Don't we all? I mean, yeah. The only time I kind of got bored with this, and I'm not saying that this happened all the time, but honestly, it's whenever Dialis is around and all the political bullshit.
The issue there is a lot of Dialis's arguments, and I wish he had appeared more / lived longer in More Than Meets the Eye, because I would have liked to have actually heard his point of view. But to be blunt, Dialis's stuff is he's kind of a straw man.
Yeah.
And doesn't want to give Optimus even any chance whatsoever. I know the other Primes have been pretty crappy, but Optimus doesn't do anything to warrant Dialis's anger in this book, in my opinion.
Mm.
So he just comes off as a whiny jerk, and he gives Optimus shit essentially for no reason. I mean, how's Optimus supposed to know Scorponok is a raving moron who's going to blow everything up?
He's not.
I feel like that's not on Optimus Prime.
No, not at all. What I love about this, outside of the Megatron stuff, and I've said it before, but I love the characterization of the Dinobots. How the over, like, by issue seven is the issue where they eventually say, maybe this Optimus can help us. Like, in the beginning, I didn't know what side they were on. I didn't know if they were just mercenaries for hire, if they were working for if they were working for Atlas, or if they were working for some weird other Cybertronian. I didn't know what the hell.
Or even the Decepticons.
I mean, I was not sure what the hell the Dinobots were doing. You know, I understood the fact of, oh my god, we need to steal this stuff so we can get paid, so we can get off this rock, because if we transform, everybody's fucked. I understood that. What I didn't understand was who the hell they were working for to do these damn jobs at the time. But now, by the time we get to this point where Grimlock and everybody are like, well, we're just going to turn ourselves in because we need help. And again, it's character growth, it's character development. It's not something I would expect with the Dinobots in most cases, because, let's face it, most of the time the Dinobots are dumb. And when the Dinobots are written intelligently. Give me 6 issues of Grimlock's New Brain, obviously not that story over and over and over again, but something like that, where they can have their dumb moments, but overall they are intelligent.
Well, it's one of the reasons I've always preferred the comic version of the Dinobots, where it's mostly just that Grimlock has a speech impediment. He's not an idiot. And he also uses it because everyone underestimates his intelligence. And the other thing I'll note, too, probably another reason I like this, is in terms of IDW, the Dinobots were used pretty heavily initially up until the miniseries Maximum Dinobots, which essentially closed off the majority of Simon Furman's run in IDW. But since that point, they have been used ridiculously sparingly. Grimlock has appeared in More Than Meets the Eye a couple of times. The Dinobots show up in RID, but without Grimlock, it's a very sort of different dynamic. And then, of course, there's the Dinobot trilogy that we'll get to from John Barber. But for the most part, they haven't been seen very much. And they're a group of characters that got overused really heavily in Generation 1 in a lot of fiction.
Well, that's because Simon loved them.
Yes.
It's like if you create a set of characters or several sets of characters that you like using, you're going to use them in whatever you can.
For example, Nightbeat is one of Roberts' favorite characters. And so when he got the chance, he resurrected him post him getting killed in Furman's run, although having said that, he's one of Furman's favorites as well. But yeah, you tend to use the guys you like, and you argue for the chance to use them, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, it's not a knock against how they use them. It's just, it was welcome to see them again all together in an IDW book.
Well, sometimes I'm silly. We all know this. But it's one of those, and sometimes I have my dumb, moments as well. There was a moment earlier where the Decepticons thought they were ambushing the Dinobots, and, oh, there's only three of you. What makes you think you can, I think it was the Scorponok battle earlier or something. And then Grimlock comes up behind him, and he's like, three? Hello, five? And then they start in the story of Scar, and I'm like, oh, there were really six Dinobots. Okay, because we all know Grimlock, Slag, and Sludge. Those are the three main ones. And then later, if you're looking at the cartoon continuity, Wheeljack created Snarl and Swoop. But I love the Dinobots here. There have been other uses for the Dinobots, Fall of Cybertron, outside of the actual IDW, it's IDW publishing books, but it's not within the main, Fall of Cybertron, and then Margrid did Rage of the Dinobots, which I thought that was really done really well. It almost rivals this as far as how well that was done, and I talked about that years ago in the pullback. So yes, Dinobots turn themselves into Prime. And that's where we begin with issue 8 here, back at Iacon.
Don't look at me, I skipped way ahead. Oh. Remember, I summed up basically the end of the book, so the Dinobots turn themselves in, yes, I know, but end up having to fight because Trypticon wakes up, etc., etc. Insert rest of what I talked about.
Yep. And this issue 8 is the moment where I just... God, Bulkhead. I just don't understand why. They want to align everybody. They want to have everybody show up. But as cool as Transformers Prime Bulkhead is, I just don't think he's a council member. So we end up figuring out that, that was the last trade. I was going to talk about the weapons, but that was the last thing. Prime and Grimlock together are really cool in this. I like them finally coming to terms and coming to some sort of agreement. Seeing Shockwave, Soundwave, and Blitzwing together, that's an interesting combination.
Yeah, especially since, Soundwave and Shockwave don't get along very well in IDW books, but, these are different versions of them, and... Yep. Grimlock roughs them up when he loses control.
Yeah. What do you think of the Dinobots designs in this?
I mentioned before, I really like them. I liked the more angry, sort of animalistic ones to depict the fact that, yeah, they have no control over it, and that's pretty much all they are.
Yeah.
Really sort of angry and smashing everything.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of some of this stuff is... because he's always been one of my favorite Decepticon characters. Whenever I see Astro Train flying around, I just love Astro Train. I think Chris and Flint did an amazing job with this story. The ending, like I said last time with the Autocracy ending, it pretty much leaves you with, okay, that's the end. We don't necessarily need another part to this story. They told the hero story in Autocracy, they tell the villain story here. What else is left that, you know, what else is left to tell?
And particularly since it's even now, they mm-hmm. both have a Titan. I mean, Megatron has Tripsy
and
Metroplex for Optimus, who, you know, they note in this too, in fact, Prime visits him at one point, that Metroplex is just not available. He's, you know, still low on power and got roughed up in the fight that we saw at the end of Autocracy.
Yeah. So, you know, without having read Primacy yet, I would assume that Metroplex gets healed up, you know, to eventually have a Metroplex Tripticon fight. I could be wrong. I probably am, but that's... you know what, dude? This is almost like a Cena-Rusev match. Or an AJ... who's AJ fighting with now? It's almost like a wrestling match where Primacy is going to be the rubber match to see who actually gets the higher ground, the final win. Because I pretty much think Metzen and Dilly said that Primacy was it. Primacy was the last part of this. There was not going to be another part of this story.
No comment. I mean, you'll have to read it.
I know.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, that's next week, folks. Again, Livio's art. I love Livio's art. Chapter 10 and 11 are probably my favorite covers. Chapter 10 was Megatron with the gun and all the purple, and Chapter 11 is Tripticon. Just absolutely love it. I'm hoping, but I don't, again, I don't know. I'm hoping we maybe see Hot Rod in Primacy. Maybe. I doubt it, but who knows. Most of Chapter 11 reminds me almost of War for Cybertron and Fall of Cybertron in terms of Livio's art. A lot of the battle scenes with Prime and Tripticon remind me of the game style that they used. So maybe they looked at this at the time. Probably not, but...
It's certainly possible. I mean, the War for Cybertron designs have been extremely positively received, probably because they're outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't shock me, I mean, if there's elements taken from it.
Yep. So by the end of Chapter 12, we've had the huge fight with Tripticon, we've got Megatron doing his thing, and like you said, you know, Megatron now has his own Titan.
Yes.
I still look at this series as solely G1. I don't look at this in the whole IDW line continuity thing, so I don't know. Kind of weird referring to them as Titans, but whatever. Monstrosity was great.
Fun with it. For whatever reason, with this one, I was able to set aside continuity, et cetera, and just enjoy it. And again, you know, that's my problem, not anybody else's with Autocracy. I don't know. It's fun. I wasn't looking for, you know, the deep sort of politics from early RID or something. So, it worked. It did, to me, it worked and did what it set out to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It very much set out to do what it got accomplished. You know, a full-on villain's tale. You know, it's almost a villain and hero's tale, because it's, you know, the Dinobots coming to terms with who they are, and Megatron, you know, kind of coming to terms with who he really is. You know, there's several lines where both Megatron and Prime tell Grimlock, you know, remember who you are. You know, I think Metzen and Dilly did an amazing job. Livio's art, oh god, it's just so good. Just so good. I didn't even have any problems with, you know, action placements. You know, we've talked about this, you know.
No, everything seemed really clear, and the designs for everyone made it really clear who was who, et cetera, et cetera. Scientific
gobbledygook, Starscream! So that's Monstrosity. What are you going to rate it 0 to 5, Ryan?
I will give it 0 to 5. No, anyway. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It's just fun.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4.5. There was only those few little nitpicky things, but those nitpicky things don't even really, you know, come into place with, you know, why I'm giving it a 4.5. I just think it's a really, really fun, almost perfect story. As I've already said, the art in it is great. So yeah, 4 and 4.5. So there you go. Coming up next on the Pull Bag is episode 150 of the podcast. So we are 50 episodes away from hitting 200. We will be the second podcast on the GCRN to ever hit 200 podcasts. Altered Geek with Steve Megatron was the first. And we're going to be talking about Transformers Primacy, which is the...
That's pretty third. Neat, especially when you consider, too, we're 50 listeners away from 50, so...
You are an ass! An ass! God. So before I was so rudely interrupted, yes, Altered Geek and the Pull Bag are going to be the only two that have hit 200 numbered episodes in a row. Where can the people find you online, sir?
At Nightbeat on Twitter.
I am at TF2 and Mike on Twitter. You can follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. You can follow at the Pull Bag on Twitter as well for all of those updates. Make your greatest game into comics, and we will catch you next time here inside the Pull Bag.
Hooray! Hooray! We've done it! Way to go!
Look! It isn't even dented! Oh, shit! What are we gonna do now?
You've just heard the latest episode of the Pull Bag, the GCRN's comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for, and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching Geekcast Radio Network. Send us an email feedback at geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.